I grew up in a family of veterans. My grandfather served in the Korean War as a spy, and then he helped to develop nuclear weapons, and then quit after the Cuban Missile Crisis because it gave him a jolt, needless to say. Then my father served as a police officer in the 80s, and then my brother served with the Army in Afghanistan. I have vivid memories of my grandmother going through our family ancestry and picking up the people that served in the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. One of my dreams when I was in about fourth grade was to become a Navy SEAL. That was very brief, as you could probably tell. But I also grew up with a movie called Red Dawn. For those unfamiliar, it was a movie with Patrick Swayze about the very implausible scenario where the Soviet Union invades the United States by land. In Colorado, this movie is a big deal, or at least it was, because it takes place in the Rockies. The high schoolers in the movie become revolutionaries, and they call themselves the Wolverines. And we literally thought the Soviet Union, this was, I remember as a kid, we thought the Soviet Union was going to invade us, even though it disbanded in 1991, and it was 2008, you know. But then later on in my life, when I was a teenager, I had decided to step away from the Christianity I was raised with. I was raised Southern Baptist. But that didn't stop my fascination with religion or philosophy. And I was reading the Gospels with fresh eyes. I could not shake off that Jesus was very different from the messages I was hearing. I could not even shake off the peace. And later on, when I was experimenting with different religions, I attended a Messianic Jewish congregation briefly. The pastor there loved to fantasize about war and violence from the pulpit. His sermons forced a mirror on me about the kind of faith and religion I wanted to have. From talking about turning the Middle East into glass, quote unquote, to talking about undocumented neighbors as if they were subhuman, I saw a truly ugly side of American Christian faith. What really started to shake me out of this as well was I had started dating a Palestinian Christian. We're still good friends to this day, but I realized that I wasn't at the church that were matching the values I was seeing Jesus espouse. So I found a hippie Quaker church in Denver, found Jesus, now I'm here. I often reflect, though, that my spiritual path directly contradicts the path I was raised in. And I think about the fundamentalist religious culture I was around. What made it difficult, especially among other fundamentalists, was that violence was so tied up in their version of masculinity. And it's very ironic that they claim to follow Jesus with this warrior mentality when Jesus frames the opposite. And you see it often with Christian nationalist theology and preachers who lay out support for far-right causes. They use select passages from the Old Testament to trump Jesus. That is why it is especially vital to understand the context of Jesus' ministry and the cross. Mennonite theology is cross-centered, or if you want to use the fancy theology term, cruciform, meaning that Mennonites believe that the ultimate character and ultimate vision of God is found through Jesus, and that we have this vision through his life, death, and resurrection. Not only in those things, but in his teachings as well. Hans Denck, an early Anabaptist theologian, said that no one could truly follow Christ unless they follow him in life. The issues Mennonites had historically with the creeds was that there was really next to no mention of the way Jesus lived. And I think that is a valid critique. While I agree with the major creed's ideas on paper for the most part, I also recognize there is no call to discipleship or Christ-likeness. The early church pre-Constantine saw the way Jesus lived as the primary way to practice their faith. They looked at the rest of the scriptures through the lens of both his life and the cross. They came to some frankly goofy interpretations of the Old Testament at times, because of that lens, because they had to make sense with the limited resources they had. But they were that dedicated to to seeing the rest of Scripture through the lens of Christ. So this begs the question, what was the cross in its context? Crucifixion was a horrific method of execution and control for the Roman Empire. In the Kirk Douglas version of Spartacus, we see in the ending an entire slave army crucified along the road. That actually happened in real life. The execution by cross is not only a brutal way to suppress rebellion, but is also a symbol to the rest of the passersby that this is what happens when you defy Rome. Thus, when the disciples hear about this possibility of Jesus going up to the cross, when they hear his prediction and what's going to happen, their first instinct obviously isn't going to be, let the teacher they love go. And that's natural. So when Jesus accuses Peter of being like Satan, though, it's reflecting the temptation Jesus faced earlier on in the Gospel of Matthew in the fourth chapter, when Satan told Jesus he could have an easier life through worldly power and riches. We can infer from the context of the Gospels that the disciples likely expected Jesus to take up the sword and retake the kingdom from the Romans. And to be clear, there were several messianic expectations around this time, suffering Messiah being one of them. But it's safe to assume that wasn't the most popular idea based on how people were receiving Jesus at the time. And of course, at Jesus' brutal execution, we see him overcome death and the powers that be by resurrecting in the face of evil. His last word on violence, death, and oppression isn't found in conquering an empire, but found in radical love that refuses to die. The revolution is found in a love that forgives sins and overcomes the worst things this world has to offer. Many Christian traditions focus on the cross, but they primarily focus on what the cross does for us instead of thinking what the cross asks of us. Meaning that many Christians will assign salvation, rightly so, but stop there. That's why 2,000 years later, we see the cross worn as casual jewelry and wall art. And it's very easy now in the 21st century America to look at the cross and not attach much radical value to it. But the cross for the Mennonites in particular was important, and it showed them a way to live. Menno Simons, the central founding figure in the Mennonite movement, wrote in The Cross of the Saints that it can never be otherwise, as you well know, than that all who wish to obey and follow Jesus Christ must take upon themselves the heavy cross of all poverty, distress, sorrow, sadness. It must so follow the rejected, the outcast, the bleeding, and crucified Christ. In other words, Menno was saying, Jesus calls us to suffer with humanity and to overcome evil with good, violence with nonviolence. Overcome violence with nonviolence. The early Anabaptists and then Mennonites took this seriously. And as you heard in Pastor Richard's story, they faced severe persecution. Picking up the cross for them was almost more literal than the things we can imagine today. But how does this look in a church community? Richard Gardner, in his Believer's Commentary on the passage, points to Jürgen Moltmann's example of how to shape ourselves as a church in response to the cross. Many of you heard me fawn over Jürgen Moltmann in the past sermons, but for those that don't know, he's a German Reformed theologian who has influenced major social justice movements. But here are the three points that Gardner brings up. The church derives its very life from Jesus' death on the cross. That sacrificial act both creates the church and defines its character. Number two is that the church is a community under the cross. It is called to participate in Christ's journey to Jerusalem, confronting the false powers that oppose Christ's rule and endure the suffering those powers inflict. And then number three, the church is called to solidarity with the wretched who live the shadow of the cross. Only in fellowship with the despised and rejected do we truly have fellowship with the crucified Christ. This is in sharp contrast with the Christian nationalist gospel we have today. The theology that we have seen present, and the one that is causing those harm, has its roots in prosperity gospel and Norman Vincent Peale, who said that the ultimate goal of the cross is power, wealth, and self-fulfillment. This is not the cross we discover in the Gospels. This is not the cross that Jesus asks us to pick up and move forward. And this is not the cross that terrified the disciples. So what do we do with this? When Jesus asks us to pick up a cross, we're faced with the seemingly impossible decision to surrender our own ideas of justice. When we're in the heat of anger especially, that drive for justice is real. We also have that drive for revenge, perhaps, or to be seen or at least get the right reaction from the world. Philosophically, that may make sense, but God asked us to take a step back and reconsider. I'm also aware in my social justice work, the very real anger that many communities feel, especially communities under attack. With some on the people on the left theorizing now would be a good time to overthrow things with force. Part of picking up the cross in our context, Aaron, learns to become, let me restart over. Part of picking up the cross then in our context becomes learning to sit with the grief many of these communities are feeling, but also continue to point a higher and better way. As Pastors Barb and Richard both stated in their sermons, nonviolence has a higher success rate and revolution. The cross points to that success as well. And we also can't expect non-Christians, especially, to understand the reasons for our convictions. I've met many activists who are very confused by my nonviolent stance, and that's okay. But I know if I'm going to face God one day, I want to live the life that Christ asks me to live. One of the strange beauties about the cross, though, is that it also shows radical solidarity with suffering and loss. God isn't on a distant throne somewhere. Instead, he shows us he is here suffering with us. But most importantly, in the resurrection, we find hope. Frederick Buechner, a popular Christian writer and theologian, wrote that resurrection means that the last thing is never the worst thing. We are about to enter the season of Lent, starting next week. We're going to be journeying with Jesus towards that cross in many ways. I want to invite us to consider the ways we are being present for the suffering people in our life and community, as we consider that Christ suffers with humanity. How can we be cross-shaped in an oppressive world today? But most of all, how can we remember that God has already had the final say? How can we remember that our work is not in vain? We are in a crucial time in history where the peace witness is needed now more than ever. I know many instances where people are looking to peace churches for answers. It's not uncommon for me to talk to people from my past who are deconstructing in their very evangelical, very Christian nationalist spaces and trying to figure out a better way to live out their faith. If it were not for the consistent Mennonite theology of peace and ways to engage the world, a lot of people would possibly feel like they have no other alternatives to the Christianity that they know. I cannot stress enough how much we need to hold on to this peace witness, especially for our sibling traditions, but also for the world. Our steadfastness to this witness communicates that God is not done, and that gives many people hope. We can participate both in carrying the cross and the ongoing resurrection today. We need to be faithful in everything that we do, because it's faithfulness in the small everyday things that make all the difference for the people around us looking at our lives. We have to be the examples of the same self-sacrificial, loving Messiah we see in the Gospels. So I'll leave it here with us to ponder today. In what new ways is God asking us to pick up the cross? How can we be in solidarity with oppressed people of the world? And how can we learn to see hope?